Did you get your award? You get to wear it around your neck all day. Yeah, just big old thing, you know.
No, he's gone today. He's gone today. Yes. He's here. He's here.
A long time ago, yeah.
Good morning, Dan. How are you? Sorry, I've been
I was just looking at it. I
think I do this ahead of everything. Is that right? Who am I giving this to? Hey, Alicia, who's receiving this? Who's receiving this?
Richard Ross.
Oh, where are they? Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is. Richard Ross.
Richard Ross? Ah, Richard. Before we gavel in the city council, I wanted to note, I'll come out here to the council. I want to note for the city council and for the greater community that Richard Ross is the recipient from Great Places in America, Neighborhoods, the American Planning Association celebrates excellence in planning by hereby designating Lads Edition in Portland as one of the great places. And Richard obviously was the heart and soul behind this. So congratulations, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you. Mayor, I'm only the messenger on this. And I think the council is partly responsible for this, for designating Lads Edition as one of the city's first historic districts in 1977, and all the work the city has done since then to back that up.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard, for all your good work. City Council officially come to order. It's Wednesday, October 14th. It's 9:30 a.m. We're in morning session of the City Council. Please come to order. Please take the roll.
Leonard? Fritz.
Aye. I mean, here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Can you please read the communications, item number 1412?
Request of Patrick Nolan to address council regarding affordable housing.
Mr. Nolan, welcome to the City Council. Just a general announcement as well, if you're a lobbyist for any organization, you need to declare that as part of your council communications. Otherwise, you only have to give us your first and last name, no address. Please go ahead.
Even if you're not paid?
If you're not paid, yeah. If you're a registered lobbyist.
I'm not registered, so okay. I guess I don't have to. My name is Patrick Nolan, and I do represent Soapbox Under the Bridge, which is a nonprofit here in Portland, Oregon. My original plan was to come and discuss affordable housing, and I instead wanted to speak to you about the, I think it's called the Sidewalk Management Initiative. Is that the new term? And I wanted to thank you for the effort on the Resource Access Center. And unfortunately, Commissioner Leonard's not here to talk about the Lou, but the Lou and the community involvement in general around this issue. I did have some questions, though, or some thoughts. And I'll, of course, send this an email form later. I was... On the first page, you mentioned the police shall create a regular update a work plan. I was hoping that this work plan wouldn't turn into something where there were words like homelessness or transients or mental illness, chronic nuisance or quality of life crimes involved in it. Is that better? Thank you. Yeah. Also, I wanted to talk about on the second item, there was a mention of private security, and I was hoping that wasn't going to turn into private security enforcing our laws in downtown Portland, because that's something that I know that a large part of our downtown community has views one way or the other on, and I would hope that that would be something that we'd talk about before it happened. Again, I wanted to thank you for the resource access, and I think it's really important that it be part of this document, since since we're discussing homelessness so much in it. I was wondering about the Real Change, Not Spare Change program, because you mentioned this as a new thing, and I've seen the coin meters in the U.S. bank that I use downtown, for instance, has one, and I was wondering if that was going to be something different, or it was going to be a different program, or how it was going to work. And then there's a lot of mention of the Portland Business Alliance, and I was especially worried about the downtown Portland retail strategy and hoping that it wasn't going to become some sort of, if you aren't shopping here, you should go somewhere else program. And I just wanted to put that out there and make sure that that wasn't going to be some. Thank you for shaking your head no.
Goodness, no.
Okay. And Mayor Adams, you mentioned that you're going to be working on the, I'm wrapping up, sorry, going to be working on the publication boxes located on public sidewalks. And I was hoping that the A boards and sidewalk cafes were also going to be in that discussion. And lastly, since we do mention homelessness so much in this document, I was hoping that the oversight committee that you mentioned would not follow the Safe Oversight Committee where there were, you know, it was a very diverse group, which I appreciate, but it lacked a real concerted effort. Since we have homelessness being such a large part of this, that it really lacked a concerted effort to have people with experience of homelessness on it. And I was hoping that it would, since homelessness takes a big part of it, that people with experience of homelessness would also be a big part of it. Thank you. And I'm sorry to go over.
No, you're great. Thanks.
That's appreciate it. Very helpful. It. Thank you.
Carla, can you please read the communications, item number 1413?
Request of Barry Joe Stoll to address council regarding cannabis therapeutics.
Mr. Stoll, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Good morning. First off, I'd like to say that I'm one of those thousands of homeless people in Portland right now, and it is raining. I lost my housing, of course, as I've mentioned to the council before, which was I'm still in the thick of it. Right now, I'm supposed to be at a ready to rent class where I'm supposed to be learning all the things that I need to have to be able to get housing, and I had all those things before my landlord brought a 30-day no-cause eviction and in the process destroyed $20,000 of my property. So I still have that eviction, and I still don't have my resources. So that's a little tough. I did have a stay at the Transition Projects Clark Center, and they cut me loose. There were other people there that were I would have been scheduled for shelter housing through November, but for reasons that didn't seem to make any sense to me, they just told me that I wasn't to be housed anymore. I've heard rumors saying that that's because Transition Projects has Commander Reese on the board. I don't think it's that sophisticated. I think there's just a general problem dealing with a social justice activist that actually has some history and some skills. So anyhow, what I wanted to speak to today about was we do have an industrial hemp bill in Oregon. We have medical marijuana in Oregon. We have, right about now, we have about 25,000 Oregon medical marijuana patients, and they are producing a slew of marijuana, including the parts that we might consider valuable for other resources. So one of the problems that I tried to address years ago before I had the wind taken out of my sails was the fact that when people get busted for growing pot illegally, the grow lights are shredded under court order and not made available to patients under the medical marijuana program. Of course, when we have cars seized on 82nd Avenue for drug prostitution stings, those get auctioned off. They don't get shredded. So I'd like to see those dumpsters emptied out with those materials made available to the patients, and I'd like those to be available to be filled up with marijuana stock so that my buddy Dave Sieber down in Eugene can continue his work for many years as he has done on composites. We forget Portland was a city before we could make paper out of trees. The processes to turn paper into trees were invented in 1846. We had Portland already a year by that time. So the annual fibers that are essential to my being, my well-being, cannabis as a therapeutic, is also something that produces, as we can go to Whole Foods and buy hemp seed in our cereals or in our other foods. And I'd like to draw the council's attention to, we've had the Medical Marijuana Act for 10 years now. I'd like the council to step up and join me. I did research. We have a spinal cord injury research fund. It has $0 in its budget. That was started by Dr. Governor Kitzhaber. And that's something that I would like to have you feel free to contact me regarding my trials, tribulations, and expertise on these issues.
And your time is up, sir.
My time is up. So there we have it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for
hearing
me.
Appreciate your testimony. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 1415?
Request of Ulysses Hardiman to address council regarding parking enforcement.
Mr. Hardiman, welcome back to the City Council.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's awesome, Mr. Bishop. With all due respect, Your Honor, you've got another haircut. Looks pretty good. I'm glad to see things straightened up for you, sir. I mean,
thank you.
I don't think people know what you're marvelous. I'm keeping touch with all these amazing moves you're making.
Well, you're very kind.
Obviously, a lot more intelligent than I am.
No.
Your Honor, I'm asking the council to join with me. Now, I mean, I need my car and my hammer and stuff back. And, I mean, it's right. I was in court with the city charter. I mean, car shouldn't have been towed. It was, I could see the city charter. They have rules for the towing people. Apparently, they had tried to get another tow company to tow the car, and they wouldn't tow it because sergeants wouldn't tow it because they saw it. Well, one tire is not on the public pavement. So then somebody made a deal and got H&D towing out there, who didn't mind going over the line and towing off the car. But I look every day, still isn't back over there. So I'm having to postpone. And
how much money would you have to pay to get it unstuck?
I have no idea where anything is now. Mm. I thought that a word from Your Honor was going to be enough for the car to peer back where it was already at. I've got my last nickel paid into it. I got it licensed, tagged, fully insured through Progressive. Mm. Everything's right on track. Then I was going to do a little junking to make a little bit of cash, and I'm buying a haul my pieces of my papers, make a little more cash, and I'm buying a hot dog cart, and I'm going back to college at Mount Hood.
So if you could, I thought we were on top of this issue, and I'm sorry that we're not. Can you stop by my office and ask Amy Stevens to find out how much it would cost to get your vehicle released? Just that specific question.
Then I'll stop by tomorrow.
That's fine.
And give Your Honor a chance to communicate with her.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your consideration and all the balls you're balancing.
Thank you, sir. All right, that gets us through the council communications, which takes us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from?
Still at 1415?
Yeah, we have one more person.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. Can you please read the title for communications item 1415?
Request of Daryl Smith to address council regarding the Poor People's Project of the Stop Pimping Alliance.
Good morning, Mr. Smith. Sorry I almost overlooked you.
That's okay.
Welcome to the City Council.
All righty. I was before you guys about a little over a year ago talking about the problem with pimping and how this criminal behavior is glorified and promoted in the society. And then we have Acorn. So I kind of like feel vindicated in what I was raising about the people basically accepting pimping. And the problem is these are organizations that work with the poor, who are the most vulnerable people when it comes to being exploited. And when you have a population that has basically accepted this culture of criminal behavior, ignoring it, it really becomes a problem and really sets up our poor to be victims. Basically, though, I'm coming to talk about the Poor People's Project. Now, this program is designed to transform the abandoned properties into viable tools for changing the social environment in targeted communities. Now, the project will help the most vulnerable and forgotten sector of our society in this time of economic turmoil, and that's the poor. Now, this program will create jobs and raise needed funds for community groups, provide the administrative office for homeless humans who wish to change and lobby for better treatment of the poor in our society. Now, the key components of the program is that through a partnership with OurGV.com, we'll be able to match homeless youth with nonprofit community groups, and the youth will be able to earn money as well as raise money for these groups, which in this economic time is going to need the extra money. Now, the second part of it is through a partnership with Workplace Training Network, we'll be able to provide the most advanced workplace behavioral training available in the country with Workplace Training Network. We'll be able to provide that to community groups and the businesses, large and small. And also, we have developed a community-based behavioral modification program, because that's my specialty. I'm a behavioral modification specialist, and this is a lifelong thing I've been working on. And we have developed a program where we can hold people, especially young people, accountable for their behavior and address the myriad of antisocial behaviors exhibited in our communities. Now, this program does not and will not reward negative behavior, which is about to happen in Chicago. Okay, you have an element that creates and acts out, and you throw $30 million at them. It's ludicrous. It's not going to work. Okay, this program will empower and reward those who want to be better humans and citizens. Now, this is not another give-me-a-grant-do-nothing poverty pen program. This can, if everyone, all sectors of the community, work together in this program, it can be self-sustaining, it can raise its own funds. It doesn't need grant money. And what I need from you guys is an opportunity to come to your offices and talk with you and see how the city can help us move forward on this. We already have an abandoned piece of property on Northeast Lombard that we have taken and rehabbed, and we just want to move forward on that. So if you can go to my website, stoppimping.com, all my contact is there. Someone from your office, please contact me, and so we can move forward with this.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you. Appreciate it. Now I think we're ready to consider the consent agenda item. Does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have two time certain and a report. Can you please read the title for the 9:30 time certain, item number 1416?
Willamette River Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel Program Update.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. This is the Bureau of Environmental Services annual report on the progress in completing the 20-year program to control combined sewage overflows, or CSOs. It's often referred to as the Big Pipe Project, although it's much more than just a big pipe tunneling project. To date, the city has completed every milestone required by the state, and we're on time and on budget.
Yay!
As we near completion of the CSO control program, we are making good progress on the construction of the East Side Big Pipe, as well as moving forward with the Balch Consolidation Conduit Project and the Selwood Pump Station Project. Environmental Services Director Dean Marriott is here, along with our CSO Chief Tunnel Program Chief Engineer, Paul Gribben, to give the council update. And I'd also like to recognize Kate Dreyfus. Is Kate here? Kate, do you want to come on up, too? Kate is a member, or Kate is Vice Chair of the project's Review Committee. So thank you for your service, Kate. And I didn't know if you wanted to say things or did you just want to
She's going to, she will follow us.
Okay. So. You will follow, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, take it away.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. And as Commissioner Saltzman said, next to me is Paul Gribben. This is actually the seventh year that we have come before the council on a twice a year basis to regularly report. And I can recall the first time I came to council to talk about this was back in 1995. So we have been reporting now on a regular basis since then. Just 60 seconds on this. Everybody talks about combined sewer overflows like everyone in the world or everyone listening to this would know what they are. Prior to 1950, all sewage and stormwater went to the river. It didn't receive any treatment at all. And it's shocking for most people to hear that, but that's the truth. And so the system, the sewer system was, the city was organized so that it was, all that waste was directed to the river and the Columbia Slough. So in the early 1950s, when the city set about to build wastewater treatment, they had to collect that sewage and get it to the plant. And they sized the pipes to provide collection for all the sewage in dry weather, but it would not be big enough to collect all the stormwater in the wet weather. So therefore, we have what's called a combined sewer system, combines stormwater and wastewater. And of course, traditionally in Portland, when it rains, that mixture overflows into the Willamette River. That's what this program is all about, a 20-year program starting in 1991 to bring that under control. And this first slide shows you the progress we've made since 1991. And we're really, this is one of those times when if someone holds up a sign and says the end is near, you should smile, because that's a good thing. We're very pleased with that progress. And the next slide is our the usual ski slopes slide that shows the kinds. This is the volume of combined sewer overflows reaching the Willamette and the Columbia Slough. And as you can see, back in the 1970s, we estimated it was about 10 billion gallons a year. When we signed the accord with the state back in 1991, we estimated we had made a lot of progress, but it was still about 6 billion gallons, so a very unacceptable number. We've cut that number by two-thirds since we've been at this, and the project we're going to talk about in some detail today, the East Side Tunnel, will pretty much get us the rest of the way. Now, here's the countdown to control of outfalls. This is all about the number of places along the river and the Columbia Slough where traditionally the combined sewage would flow. Now, all of the Columbia Slough outfalls were controlled in December of 2000, and the Columbia Slough has met its water quality standards since then, so that's a success story. And you can see the progress we've made since then. And we have 19 remaining outfalls that reach the Willamette that need to be controlled and will be in the next couple of years. Now, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, it's not just tunnels. The tunnels are a huge component of this effort, of course, but it also begins with Portland homeowners and business owners. The Downspout Disconnection Program has been an enormous success. It has gotten over a billion gallons of stormwater out of the system. That's water that doesn't create combined sewer overflows. And through June of this year, we had 26,000 property owners in Portland that took the initiative, sometimes with our assistance and sometimes without, to disconnect over 50,000 downspouts. And we want to thank all of our partners in Portland for that effort. It also involves green infrastructure, and many of you on the council know all about green infrastructure, eco-roofs, roadside swales, planters, green streets. They're very effective at cleaning stormwater and preventing stormwater from getting into the sewer system and causing combined sewer overflows. I want to just show a couple of slides of the progress we've made in this area. Eco-roofs, some of these you may recognize because, for instance, one of them is on the roof of the Portland building. But so far we have about 9 acres of eco-roofs in Portland, 12 acres of roof gardens, so combined 21 acres of what we call green roofs. That's almost 1 million square feet of green roofs in Portland. Enormous progress in the last decade. We've set a goal of quadrupling the acreage of green of eco roofs in the next 4 years. So we hope to get close to 2 million square feet of eco roofs just in the next 4 years. Again, it's going to make a big difference not only in water quality and air quality and livability, it's going to make a tremendous difference in preserving the capacity of the infrastructure that we're building right now. Now, the last element of green infrastructure I want to talk to you about are green streets. We have more than 700 green street features in Portland just, again, in the last decade. We've made enormous strides in this area. People come from all over the world to see how we do it. And, again, we've set an enormous goal out there of adding another 900 green streets over the next 4 years. So we hope to add significantly to the inventory. And, again, it's not only to provide all the environmental benefits that these facilities provide, it's to protect the capacity of our existing infrastructure as well. So I'm going to shift gears. Before I turn it over to Paul, just say a few words about the East Side Tunnel, sort of the big picture. You can see from this map You recall that we started tunneling from OMSI, the opera site, on the east side of the river, going north. It's a six-mile-long tunnel, if you take the whole length into consideration, finished inside diameter of 22 feet. It's between 85 and 165 feet deep, and we have seven access shafts to get to it. So far, we're about 65% finished. Paul, if you shift gears to the next slide, we're just about to reach the confluence shaft at Swan Island. For those of you who have been out to the big pump station on Swan Island, right next to the pump station is a large shaft sitting open, ready for the receipt of the tunnel boring machine, which perversely we believe now will arrive on Halloween. So we're not exactly sure how to dress for that occasion, but we will celebrate mightily when that happens. Once the tunnel boring machine breaks through into that shaft, it will mark a significant milestone in this project. We hope and project that by about the week of November 16th, we will remove the tunnel boring machine from the shaft on Swan Island. At that time, we'd like to invite members of the council and members of the public to come and view that event. And we then will place Rosie, the tunnel boring machine, onto a barge and ship that down back to the OMSI opera shaft, where it will be put back on the ground, refit and refurbished, put back into the opera shaft and turned south, and finish the mining operation to 17th and McLaughlin. That will finish the east side tunnel. So lots of opportunities for the public and ratepayers to see these special events coming up in November and December. So we look forward to having you at those. Now I'll turn it over to Paul, who will talk about some of the details of the construction.
Talk about money first. This is the status of the contract we have with Kiewit Bilfinger-Berger, the joint venture that's doing the main east side tunnel project. Original contract cost in 2011 dollars is projected to be $426 million. Well, that is the approved contract amount, but our projection for what it will actually cost is about $388 million. So we are right now tracking well under the budget that we had set for this project. Our current contingency we're carrying for risk is at $23 million. It was reduced from $38 million. How we came up with that was, the original contingency was $38 million, and that was to cover all the risks that we could see. We update it every 6 months. We do another risk analysis every 6 months. We eliminate the risks that have already passed, and we evaluate any new ones that we can think of. And so at 70% completion of the project, we knocked the contingency down to $23 million. Employment, so far we've had over 175 first-tier subcontracts. Most of them have been local. That including second and third tiers, almost 400 total subcontracts. Our original goal, Minority Women Emerging Small Business Contracting, was $26 million. That's already been met. We anticipate another approximately 2 to 3 million by the time we finish in 2011. And right now we have about 240 local craft workers directly employed on the project. We've got some other CSO projects that are going on at the same time. Portsmouth Force Main, which I'll get into in just a second. It's in two segments, segment one and two. We've got about 65 active construction jobs on that right now. Phase two of Swan Island will be about 15 active construction jobs. The Selwood projects that Dean mentioned before, we anticipate about 50 direct construction jobs, and the Balch Consolidation Conduit, which is currently ongoing, is about 50 construction jobs. Now, how that translates into impacts in the local economy is it's multiplied. There's a ripple effect of all the other businesses and people who get direct benefits from that expenditure of money, and this is a job equivalent based on construction expenditures. So the total amount of money that we're spending on this is equivalent to about 5,500 jobs to the local economy. We had an audit done on the east side a few months ago, two pieces to it, a financial audit and project management. The financial audit raised 8 payment issues. We investigated all of them. We found one insurance overbilling, which since has been credited back to the Bureau. Project management audit basically said that we and the contractor were doing a very good job in management of the project. We have a number of challenges ahead of us. yet to go in the last 2 to 2.5 years. As Dina mentioned, we've got the Sellwood pump station yet to go, the Balch consolidation conduit, which are two separate outfalls to be controlled by 2011. And then Portsmouth Force Main segments 1 and 2 and a Swan Island pump station upgrade also have to be done in order for us to perform the east side outfall tie-ins in 2011. So those have to be done. They're underway right now, but they've got to be finished before we can tie in the east side outfalls to the tunnel. This just shows you a map of where these projects are located, and I'll just get into the specifics. Portsmouth, as we mentioned before, is a 3-mile-long, 6-inch diameter pressurized pipeline from the Swan Island pump station to the existing Portsmouth tunnel. It's currently under construction right now. Then we had Balch, currently also under construction right now on the west side of the river. Ties into the existing Nikolai shaft. It's an 84-inch diameter pipe. Sellwood pump station, which is going to go into construction in early 2010, which is the southernmost outfall along the east side of the river. This is a picture of the opera shaft in February of 2007, the site, and now looking at it overhead, this is how it looks now. And you can see the down in this bottom left center is a picture of the opera shaft, and north of that is the opera building, and then the old Water Avenue, and all that is the staging area. In 2010, streetcar is going to be coming through, and they're going to have to do a surcharge where a corner of our staging area, the contractor's office site is. And so we are coordinating with streetcar. Right now, we meet every month with OMSI, streetcar, and light rail. Because in 2010, it gets a little, 2011, it gets a little more complicated. Oops. When light rail comes through. So in the spring of 2011, we're going to have 3 active projects going on. The light rail bridge, streetcar down the old Water Avenue, and finishing up our work. So it's going to be quite a coordination effort. So with that, if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Other than that, we have Kate Dreyfuss and I believe Derek Chisholm of the Review Committee here to give their report.
Do you want to hear from them?
Yeah, I want to go ahead and hear from them.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I do. Before they come up, I do want to thank not only the committee that you'll hear from momentarily, but I really want to thank the Portland business owners and residents who and drivers and people from all over that have been very patient with us. We, as you can see from the maps, we have construction sites all over the city, and everyone has been really great in understanding that they are willing to put up with some inconvenience because they recognize the benefit of the goal. I'm going to take a moment to thank them.
Hear, hear. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Thanks for your service on this Oversight Committee.
Thank you. I'm Kate Dreyfuss, and with me is Derek Chisholm. And we're both members of this committee, and there isn't really all that much to be said on a project that's on schedule and under budget. Except I would add that the recordable accident rate is also under the OROSHA records industry standard, and the apprenticeship goals are also being met. And it's great to serve on the committee. We've been doing it for about 3.5 years, I guess, now. And really, there isn't much more that I can add except to recognize Derek.
Nor would I. Perhaps one day there will be an issue that we'll need your guidance on, but at this time, the project team, both private and public sides, are doing a phenomenal job, and our scrutiny can't turn up anything worth bringing to your attention at this time, other than that this is represents a great opportunity, I think, to show the citizens that a major public project is not riddled with ineptitude. It can come in with considerable savings ahead of schedule. It is possible, and that these folks know what they're doing.
Well, thank you both very much for your service. Appreciate it. Has anyone else signed up to testify on item number 1416?
I didn't set out a sign-up.
Anyone wish to testify on presentation council item number 1416? This is a presentation does not require a vote. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. I guess I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Bureau of Environmental Services staff, thank our Citizen Review Committee members, and our contractors for doing an excellent job. So this is a big, Portland's biggest construction project ever, and it's really heartening, as Derek said, to say this is not something that's escalating out of control or out of budget. So we're really pleased to be delivering this at the end of 2011 on time and on budget.
Commissioner Fritz.
I also thank everybody for your involvement and for the public outreach folks, for the businesses that have been impacted and disrupted, and for everybody, and especially for the Citizen Oversight Committee. Thank you very much for your volunteering. And recognizing that the increases in rates have been very difficult for many ratepayers to manage, and so what government has to do when we are asking citizens to pay more is to make sure that we use those resources wisely and for the purpose that they're intended. So it's good to have this report, and it's good to see that the project is on time and under budget. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Commissioner Saltzman, Dean, and your team. I can just see the headline tomorrow: on time and under budget.
Don't hold your breath, Commissioner.
What are you thinking? Thank you.
Don't hold your breath, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I'd add my thanks as well, having had an opportunity for 4 years to be commissioner in charge of this project. I know that the great results are not an accident. They're the product of very hard work. And Paul and Dean, want to thank you and your teams. And again, underscore my thanks to the Citizen Oversight Committee. Part of our success, I think, is the fact that you've been there for 2-3 years and developed the history and expertise. So thank you. All right, I'm pleased to, before we move on and hear Council Calendar Item 1417, I'm pleased to welcome today five Russian government officials who are here with the Open World Leadership Center, hosted by our very own great League of Women Voters. They are studying all levels of our government and gaining firsthand experience of American life and culture. And I'd like to welcome Alexander Valentinovich Medvedev, Andrei Vladimirovich Tarasov, Arina Nikolaevna Malinina, Veronica Vladimirovna Trushkova, and the last one, Sergey Vladimirovich Yeager. Welcome. And I apologize for mangling your names. You might want to translate that. We really appreciate you being here. All right. Carla, would you please read the title for Council Time Certain at 10 o'clock, item number 1417?
Accept summary commission report on the Portland Commission on Disability.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz. Oh, and please read the companion report, item number 1418.
Appoint 30 members to Portland Commission on Disability.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you. This is an exciting and momentous occasion, and thank you all for being here. It's actually in record time because it was only in last December that the summary commission to form the Commission on Disabilities was created by council resolution on December 17th. And so here we are ready to appoint the commission members. So I invite Polly Livingston and Carrie Jo Stairs, the from the summary commission, to come up and tell us some more about what's been going on. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, members of the council. I'm Polly Livingston, and this is Carrie Jo Stairs. The Portland Commission on Disability was adopted by the City Council on December 17, 2008, in Resolution Number 36657. In this resolution, 15 summary commissioners appointed by the mayor were directed to accomplish the following task. One, adopt bylaws fully reflective of the mission and guiding principles of the Portland Commission on Disabilities.
Secondly, adopt an action plan fully reflective of the mission and guiding principles of the Portland Commission on Disabilities. The purpose of the action plan is to actualize the commission's values and set goals and objectives.
Third, forward recommendations for regular appointments to the commission, to the commissioner in charge of the commission.
And finally, to report to the City Council on the completion of the aforementioned goals. And we'd like to start by inviting up the chairs of the Bylaws Committee to tell you about their process and success.
Well, good morning.
Stop changing furniture and sit down.
Welcome.
All right. Hi, Jan. I'm Ann Belzel. I'm here with Jan Campbell to talk to you about an exciting project that we got to work on this summer as part of the Summary Commission. This is an astonishing new commission that I think we can all be proud of. And some of the things that we're particularly interested in are the way the bylaws, and Jan and I got to work on those bylaws, reflect the differences, the uniqueness of this group. For one thing, we will eventually in this group have 31 members. 23 will reflect agencies in the community, such as the one I work for, the National MS Society, and the other MS agency, the MS Society of Portland, that serve people with disabilities in this area. There are also 8 at-large positions to make sure that we haven't forgotten anyone. We want everyone to be included in this group. We want the voice of every person with a disability to be heard here. Membership requirements are quite unique as well. To qualify, you have to live, work, or be enrolled in school here. That makes sense, but we went beyond that because we know from experience with you as a commission that you are truly welcoming to people with disabilities. So we also said, if you participate in cultural, civic, social organizations in the city of Portland, we would like to hear your voice as well, because those people are certainly as important to us. And 51% of the people on this commission will be persons with a disability, so that what we can hear is what's truly happening. Jan?
Thank you, and good morning, Mayor and Council members. I'm going to talk a little about staff and liaisons and a little bit about the standing committees. Our staff, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, shall designate a staff person to provide staff support to the commission, and then we'll also have the Disability Project Coordinator as the role of an advisor to the commission. One of the things that we're really excited about is the liaison. The following bureaus of the City of Portland and their successors shall provide staff to serve as bureau liaisons to the commission. And preference for this role will be given to having bureau ADA coordinators. And other bureaus will be added in the future. And some of these bureaus that will be involved are neighborhood involvement, transportation, environmental services, police bureau, Office of Emergency Management, Fire and Rescue, Bureau of Emergency Communications, Management and Finance, Parks and Recreation, Housing Bureau, Planning and Sustainability, the Development Services, Office of Human Relations, and the Portland Development Commission. The role of the Bureau liaisons will to be attend regular scheduled commission meetings. They are encouraged to create ad hoc advisory committees from the commission, and the purpose of these committees is to give input into programs and projects to ensure inclusive access for people with disabilities and for everyone. And I think this is very exciting. The Parks Bureau has been involved in having a group of people with disabilities to work on the parks and making access, and they started that in the 90s, actually when I was on staff here at the city. And it's really worked. And what it does is it builds a relationship between staff and people with disabilities to work together to look at remedies of making the parks, again, not accessible just to people with disabilities, but to everyone. And I think the other important thing is that, you know, we do have the ADA, and that's a requirement. But when you work with people with disabilities, they can help you go beyond the ADA, which is really the right thing to do, is to go beyond it. And they can also help with solutions that make it maybe not as costly as some people that didn't experience a disability would think about. We also have the standing committees, and this will be a part where the public and our community can participate in discussion on issues that the commission will be working on. And before I pass this on, I do want to thank Nicole Sharon, who made this possible. The community, and especially the disability community, has wanted this for so long, and it's kind of been a dream of ours. But she, with all her hard work, has made it become a reality to us. And I also want to thank Tekla Anderson, who's been our support for the interim commission. There was, as you know, an interim commission, which some of us were a part of. And she's been a wonderful support to keep the commission, the interim commission, on track. So I want to give a special thanks to both of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
And now I'm going to turn it over to the action committee chairs, which is Carrie Jo, and is Denise here?
I believe I'm going to.
You're going to do that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
So while we change folks, I just want to mention that I'm so excited that I was assigned the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and that the Commission on Disabilities is part of that. The staff there is equally excited about what's going on there. And to mention to my colleagues that it was exactly the right assignment because nobody else has been so excited about bylaws as you have been. And that's
indeed.
And it's important. They are important. And you've done a lot of good work on them. So thank you very much.
And the Action Committee's job was threefold. First, we were to try and come up with a mission statement that everyone could agree on, and also to set the guiding principles for the summary commission to, or for the full commission to work off of, and to do a needs assessment of the community of people with disabilities to find out what would actually be meaningful to them for a commission to do. And so I'd like to just read what the mission statement and guiding principles are, and then to talk just briefly about what we did to attempt to set goals for the commission, to begin that process. So the mission statement, as it reads, is, the mission of the Portland Commission on Disability is to guide the city in ensuring that it is a more universally accessible city for all. And then there are seven guiding principles. The first of which is, every individual must be treated with dignity in a manner that is culturally respectful to him or her. Every effort shall be made to overcome misconceptions and biases regarding persons with disabilities.
And the second, individuals with disabilities have the right to attain their highest level of independence, self-determination, and self-support. In exercising self-determination, people with disabilities have the right to make and express choices in all aspects of their lives, in all stages of their lives.
Three, people with disabilities have the right to participate in all community activities and shall have equal access to all programs and services that serve the public.
And fourth, there is a broad range of disabilities and therefore a broad range of needs in the community. Policies and procedures shall be flexible enough to address the changing and varying individual needs of persons with disabilities.
Five, because the experience of disability also includes friends, family, associates, and loved ones, these guiding principles also apply to them.
Six, input and participation from persons with disabilities at all levels of decision-making, goal-setting, and policy formation shall be considered and included.
And finally, number seven, a universally accessible city is a more livable city for all persons and presents a new paradigm of how we thrive in a city and respect its diversity. The final thing we did was a survey that went out to and invited all people with disabilities, their loved ones, families, people who worked with disabilities, people who had friends with disabilities, to answer a couple of questions about what would be meaningful for them, a commission could do, what kind of goals would they like to see. It was the beginning of the process. It was by no sense exhaustive, and I expect that the commission would probably pick it up and continue on and extrapolate and continue to do some more needs assessment. But the two things that rose to the top remarkably were the ones that we took and wrote goal statements on that we could pass on to the full commission as a place for them to get started. So I'd just like to also read those two goals for you so you know what the goals of the commission will be. The first goal is, the Portland Commission on Disability will support the City of Portland to design and implement an effective educational campaign about people with disabilities. The purpose of the campaign is to educate all people working, living, and visiting Portland about disabilities and disability social history for the purpose of eliminating discrimination, implementing disability rights, and increasing livability for people with disabilities. And that particularly, I just say, comes out of many responses of people who are whose main concern was just how they, as a person with disability, had been treated unfairly and would like to have an opportunity to have a restorative experience with the people or businesses or whoever it is that they had that experience with. And so to just educate people so that those experiences become less and less over time. And the second goal is the Portland Commission on Disability will support the City of Portland to maintain, increase, and monitor avenues of physical access for all people. In addition to general ADA compliance, the Commission shall encourage the City to increase accessible sidewalks, bathrooms, doors, parking, and signage. The Summary Commission's last meeting in September will recommend these things to the full Commission for their review. We'll give them all of the information, any reporting that we have, and results, as well as the report and survey results from the previous community survey that was done. The Portland Commission on Disability in December 2008, or in December, so that they can come up with, like we said, more their goals more so that they have all of the information that they can review that. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Actually, I have two quick, is this the right place to ask two quick clarifying questions? So this is superb work. I wanted to make sure I'm interpreting the definition of disability correctly, that state and federal definitions of disability, the way I read this, are sort of the floor for making sure that the city is accessible to all and that we inspire to be sort of the best of class. So there's the state and federal requirements, there are our own, but our own expectations might be higher. Is that, that's the gist of what I get from this? Is that a fair interpretation?
That's fair.
Okay. And then the second thing is, as a transportation commissioner with that oversees 4,000 miles of streets and roads, many of which are substandard, how do issues get on the agenda or become part of the focus of the commission? I mean, clearly self-initiated, I assume, is part of it, but how would... transportation, we're always making these tough trade-offs. Do we do this or this? We never have enough money to do everything. Sort of, how would transportation sort of get on the agenda of the commission?
Well, there would be opportunity for liaisons to suggest issues that need to be addressed by the commission, and to actually ask to have a subcommittee established in response to that those issues. And this is certainly something that the commission will want to be involved in.
So we can ask.
Absolutely.
And the commission can say yes or no.
Yeah.
I would say beyond that, that all bureaus should be thinking, I need to ask the Commission on Disability before we move forward with this project.
Mm-hmm. This is your commission.
Yes.
This is the commission for the city. And so utilize it. Get the best out of it. Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous resource for the citizens, for the bureaus, and with all those bureau liaisons, the bureau's liaisons can put things on the agenda for consideration by the whole commission.
Great.
For public input. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Any other questions? I'm going to read a list of the 30 people being appointed to the Commission on Disability today. And thank you very much for serving. I'm going to actually read the positions also because it's illustrative of the process that went into making sure that we do have a diverse and representative commission. So we have Melanie Calvin, who's the first eight are at large. Melanie, could you just raise your hand? Yes, thank you very much. Melanie Calvin, Christina Cooper, Therese Grayson, Scott Hatley, Adam Chris, Nyla McCarthy, Carrie Jo Stairs, and Michael Sporluck. Those are our at-large commissioners. Thank you.
Yay.
And it's a long list because it's a new commission, but each person is very important, and we thank you for serving. We have five multicultural commissioners: Sopak Bell, Ellen De La Torre, Linda Lehang Nguyen, thank you, Rodolfo Soto, and Dean Westwood, thank you. We have two commissioners for youth issues, James Jackson and Molly King. Thank you for being here. We have two folks for chronic health issues, Jules Krenz and Hannah Pastore. Thank you. Mei Ling Wan representing blind and low vision issues. Charles Davis for healthcare and support services. Phyllis Petiz, University and College Organization. Martha Simpson on elder issues, Travis Wool for employment, Amy Anderson for mental health, Anna O'Malley for disability law. Thank you so much for all of you being here. This is terrific. Caitlin Wood for mobility, Jan Campbell for transportation, Joe Vanderveer from Multnomah County, Catherine Todd from veterans, Rena Wagley, Development and Cognitive Disabilities. Nisha Saxane for Housing. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your assistance with that nomination. And we still have one opening for someone representing deaf and hard of hearing, but that's our 30 commissioners.
Yay! Carla, do we have people signed up?
We do. We have three people. Please come on up. Barry Jo Stoll, Amy Anderson, and Mindy Stone.
Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name. And the clock on that big hunk of wood helps you count down 3 minutes.
Hi, Barry Jo Stoll. I'm a person with a disability. I've got a central neuropathic pain condition. In most of the lists in the legislation, they start off with body systems, and mine is a neurological, which is the first on the list, and very difficult for people to understand because it's a wiring condition. I rode my bicycle here. I have a spinal cord injury. That means I have a pain condition where because of my nerve damage, I experience pain, which also triggers to other systems, nausea, and as we're experiencing now, fits of forgetfulness and sometimes being disorganized. I'm heartened to know that the City Council has taken action on this. I personally have exhausted every administrative remedy in the state of Oregon. I currently have a federal civil rights complaint. The issue is under Oregon law, the Bureau of Labor and Industry Civil Rights Division is basically what we use to enforce and interpret the Oregon statutes, which are typically found in ORS Chapter 659A. The problem is that once the courts are involved, the Bureau of Labor and Industries doesn't take any action. So we have this legislation that just doesn't have any teeth. My problem was even worse because I was drawn into a case that it wasn't even legal for the landlord to file, and I haven't been able to extricate myself from that because my landlord not only brought me into this lengthy and extraordinarily costly legal battle, I'm sure they spent about $50,000, and destroyed, as I mentioned earlier this morning in my testimony, $20,000 worth of my personal resources. Now, the problem is, of course, is that my neurologist says that medical marijuana is my best treatment option, and that's just a quirk of history that since the 1930s that we had this issue of it not being medicine, even a question in our society. And so the problem is as long as we're going to allow cultural bias and the people that are actually filling the positions, the judge sitting in the chair, for example, if we're going to allow them to act against the law because of inherent cultural biases, mine happens to be against marijuana,